Maybe let's start with the funding that's been going on in the AI companies.
Sure.
Do you think like AI is being given too much importance, or do you think the that the funding that is going is like there is actually potential there? And like I'm kind of making a parallel to maybe crypto. I think crypto, there was a lot of funding, but soon after that, I think after a few years, there was a crash as well. And now everybody seems to be confused whether, you know, is there a real business model here? And are there like real products to be built with this Web 2, Web 3 technology? With AI, do you see that happening as well? Or
I actually don't think so. I don't believe that crypto and Web 3 is the right analogy. I mean, AI is very, very real. In fact, it is one of the most transformative technologies that have come up in the last 20, 25 years, I would say, you know, along with, we've seen several waves of innovation from the personal computer to the internet, to mobile, to cloud computing, and now AI, right? And the thing is that the important thing about AI is that it's gonna happen way faster than some of the other things happen. Right. For internet and mobile, you had to have the hardware, the telecom infrastructure, the inexpensive handsets, and all of that. AI is using all of that. It is built on top of all of that. Of course, the new hardware from NVIDIA and other folks who are now designing chips and hardware just for AI computing, which will be a whole different form of computer architecture. But this thing is going to mature and the cycles of innovation will be much faster, and we are already the potential applications of this technology are immense. There's literally nothing. Literally, we can't think of anything that will not be impacted by AI, whether it is all kinds of knowledge work. All kinds of knowledge work will get impacted. Now, as far as business models are concerned, that's still evolving, right? There are, like in with any such fundamental technology, there are three layers. There is the foundation layer of the large LLMs, the large language models, and so on. Then there are the picks and shovels. And the foundation models will obviously require huge amounts of investment, and there are probably a handful of players who will be able to build those. Then there are the picks and shovels, if you will, right? If you could think of the LLMs as the operating system, then the picks and shovels are sort of the middleware, right? And there is a frenzy of activity because there are requirements, whether it is fine tuning, adding this, adding that, so, and you know. Now the question is, and then there are the services on top. Services are. You know, any average product or service company, whether it is in fintech, in agri, in climate, in job tech, in across the board, what have you, the application of Gen AI, as we call it, whether it is to improve efficiency of operations, right, or to actually have a much better customer value proposition, is tremendous. And interestingly, the thing is that this is very early. This, unlike Web3, crypto, all of this, is not a solution looking for a problem. This is really a transformative innovation, and we are still very early. We're still very early in the innovation cycle, and the kinds of improvements and the kinds of things we'll see over the next 1, 3, 5 years is going to be breathtaking. There is no question about it.
So if we can maybe move away from, if we can take a step back from startups, and maybe if I look at the Indian, I think, export industry, when we export, I think services export,
right,
that's a decent chunk of our GDP. Do you think that's going to dramatically change because of...
That will get impacted. That will certainly get impacted. Knowledge work of different kinds, whether it is back-end legal processing, back-end science database searches and analysis, back-end financial processing, back-end healthcare claim processing, back-end any kind of knowledge work, right? Computer programming, application development, software development, ERP development, all kinds of things Models of agri advisory, okay? Advisory of all kinds, right? Anything that requires a marriage of general reasoning along with data.
So it's going to get
companies that are able to harness this proactively, and rather than sort of bury their heads in the sand or say it's not going to impact them, will certainly come out ahead.
So I'm going to push you on this in the sense that it's mostly like a broad brushed, like I'm sensing, like,
yeah,
you know, it'll impact everything, many sectors, but I'm still not clear, like, exactly what it's going to do. Like, when you spoke about going back to the internet analogy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there I was pretty clear in the sense, mostly because it's also played out as well.
Yeah.
So obviously in retrospect, I
yeah.
have the information. So in that paradigm, obviously there are physical stores, that itself is a limitation. Somebody sitting in, let's say, Noida is not able to
yeah.
purchase something from, let's say, Church Street. And that is probably solvable through the internet medium.
Yeah.
With deep learning or with AI, like, can you give us like some concrete examples in like maybe a few sectors, maybe, or maybe?
Yeah, I mean, let me give you two examples.
Sure.
Customer support can be automated. Customer call centers with Gen AI pilots, co-pilots, and text to audio, audio to text, and an interactive communication with a customer. Right, it can be done. Much better, right? Much cheaper, and much more scalable. Direct impact, you will see that. Second, I'll give you a very positive impact, very positive. One of the issues we've had with education is there's so much content in the world, right? If it were only about content, kids would by now all have become Einsteins and Newtons and so on, right? So it's much more than content. While Khan Academy is obviously a terrific step in the right direction, it's about motivation, it's about mentoring, it's about having that person be with you, right? So how do you solve the education, particularly K-12 challenge and things like math, right? Think conceptually difficult things. Content is not the issue at scale, right? Always it has been intimacy or scale. We have a company in our portfolio called QMath. What Gen AI allows you to do, if you have a co-pilot, teacher co-pilot, and a student co-pilot, it does two seemingly contradictory things. The co-pilot can, and QMath or any such, you know, endeavor will have thousands of teachers. Of course, they'll all be trained, but they'll be of variable quality, all of that, right? If you have a co-pilot that sort of helps the teacher navigate a live session, right, you can bring uniformity and consistency in the processes. So one thing it can do is it can make consistent and uniform and of a uniformly high quality the delivery of pedagogy by different kinds of teachers. That's one. Second,
I'm so sorry, I want to jump in here, but I sympathize with your point, but I agree with the pros as well.
It is happening.
But your initial point of like, I feel like your initial point about like content not being the problem, I feel that still holds there, right? Like in the sense,
I'm making a broad brush stroke. If it were only content, right, you could create all kinds of content, right? So the internet, people said, okay, if I put content, the internet is awash with content. Point is, it requires more than content. Even the best content is not sufficient, right? It requires that human touch, that delivery, right? So that's what that's one aspect of it. Second is, it requires the ability to personalize to a student's learning capabilities, where they are, how they learn, and traverse a journey that is ideal, suitable for them. So the same technology can, interestingly, not introduce uniformity across teachers, but also introduce personalization across students. It's very early days, right? I mean, I'm not saying it's a solved problem. It's one of the biggest unsolved problems in education, is how do you marry intimacy with scale? Okay? This tech has the ability to be able to do that, right? This is one of the areas where I do not believe, I could be wrong, obviously, talking about the future. Teaching in particular, I do not believe that unlike a call center, unlike a customer support center, the teachers are going to go away. I don't believe that. I believe that Gen AI is the perfect technology for teachers plus plus. Teachers augmented with this technology are going to have a dramatic exponential improvement in learning outcomes. Okay, so I'm giving you two examples where GAI can actually arm humans. Like a GAI assisted math teacher is going to be much better, right? There will be consistency across teachers and they will be able to adapt to the personal, to the strengths and learning sort of modes of an individual student. And there will be certain applications like customer support, for instance. A lot of it will get automated. On software development, entry-level engineers will become that much more productive, right? Will it lead to fewer software? Maybe. But then also remember that so much of the world is still not digitized, still analog. We are still, when you think of business processes, data, it's even in the, if you talk to economists and experts in the Western world, they say it is still, so much of it is not in digital format. Imagine the global South of 5 billion people, right? Across South Asia, Southeast Asia, Africa, LATAM, and so on, which is from a global growth perspective, this global South is actually, from an economic growth perspective, adding more to the GDP than the global North. So it's becoming increasingly more weighty in the overall scheme of things. So much needs to be done. Gen AI can be hugely transformative in that. Will there be losers? Yes, there will be certain pockets, right? I mean, and governments and companies and individuals will have to adapt to that. But it is of a fundamentally different nature, we believe, than crypto and Web3 and all.
Let's go back to foundation models. In India, at least, I feel like it's very difficult, or at least I have not seen anything come out of India where it might be competing with, let's say, the likes of OpenAI or Google or Microsoft, per se. So is it fair to assume that, another analogy, I don't know if this is the correct one, but India in general has been a software play, like most of it has been a software play. So will we again stick to that niche of, you know, so the US or Western world will, you know, come up with these foundation models, and on top of that, you know, we'll do our
early days. It is too early in the day to forecast anything. We could have, I mean, there is a lot of folks, both the government and in the private sector, have talked about building foundational models of our own, and let's see whether we are able to do that. And obviously, there will be. Adaptations to the models, which will be industry specific, and you know, who knows, there could be an India stack kind of initiative, right?
What do you mean?
Like we have, you know, the UPI and the Aadhaar and so on, which is used by every business, so many businesses, for a small fee, and some of it is free to consumers. On top of which, you've got innovative businesses. So many things built, so many capabilities have been built. It could be a similar thing for LLMs, right? For an AI stack, for some big industry sector that has very unique South Asia or Global South aspects, like agri. Agri, the way it is done in Global South is very different from the large corporate farms of the US, right? So permutations, combinations, configurations are all open. There is nothing fixed. I think we will see a lot of innovation at the policy level, at the overall macro business architecture level, micro business level, tech level. But one thing I am very sure about, I personally and my partners in our firm, is that this is not some fad that is going to go away. Obviously, there will be hype. Any technology comes with hype cycles, right? Whether it was, you know, the steam engine or electricity or internet or mobile, what have you, right? I mean, it's like initially is this high, and then it goes along like this, and then at the end, finally, 20, 30 years later, the true transformative technologies actually transform societies and businesses and everything way more than the initial hype. Way more, in the long run. When you look back 30, 40 years, right? Same thing with the computer. When back in the, whenever it was, in the 50s, you know, it was the scientists. In fact, I think Thomas J. Watson famously said that you probably need a few of these at the IBM T.J. Watson Center.
I think internet is also a very good example where I think in 2001 it crashed and then nobody invested and now it's everywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
And it is still, in many places, it's still early, including our own country.
That is just sad, I feel.
It is the reality. Which I won't see it as sad. I would see it as the glass is half full, or there's so much more water to put in it.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. It is 2023, right? So I'm like, you still don't have it. Like, I mean, so yeah. So one aspect is tech, right? Like, so there is deep learning and there is large language models being built by companies. And that's happening in the US, that's happening in Europe, and that's happening in India, China, etc. So one aspect is the tech aspect. Second aspect is like what's going to happen with that tech, which is where I feel talent comes in. What are you going to do? Who are you going to serve, and what markets are you going to serve these products or services in? Do you see that Indians are taking advantage of this?
I have every faith in our ingenuity. One of the things that Gen AI does is breaks the language barrier. Most of the content today in the free world, like, I mean, if you don't look at China, still in English on the internet, right? In terms of what Gen AI can do is to break that language barrier and make available vast amounts of information, knowledge, content, all of that to folks who are not comfortable in English, to real-time, you know, translation and so on. So I think, again, very early days, we are big believers, but we are our place in the whole value chain is in ensuring that the products and services companies and startups and founders and that we invest in are not thinking of Gen AI as, hey, okay, I got to do something about it, but they are Gen AI first, right? What are the kinds of things we can do that we couldn't do before? Right? What I'm not, and in our existing portfolio of startups, hey, in fact, it's interesting that so many of our founders and CEOs, like, I'm going to wait for somebody to come and disrupt my startup. They have hackathons and they have the Skunkworks teams inside saying, hey, okay, you go and disrupt our business. What would you do? Right? Take this function or take that function or take this value prop, right?
I'm going to push again on the talent aspect in the sense that. So deep learning, I feel, is a very, at least, I think if you go back to 2017, 2016, in general, I think they would require you to have like a PhD to like do stuff in machine learning.
Right.
And after that, I think because of the money that was being poured in and
yeah.
the salaries that were
yeah.
like being allotted to like machine ML engineers, I think a lot of like general
yeah.
folks also started
also,
like,
yeah.
started
yeah,
doing
yeah.
like
yeah, yeah.
deep Coursera courses and,
true.
But I still feel like you still need like a lot of specialization, understanding of like, let's say how a language model works,
yeah.
Then how a large language model works.
Yeah.
How
and
to
then you need to have the hardware.
You need to
train all these models.
Yeah.
And it's not just about the underlying technology of neural networks has been around for a long time. It's the computability. The ability to compute this right?
Yeah.
That's highly expensive.
I wanna add that to the skill aspect in the sense that, so one aspect is skill in fine-tuning or training large language models. Another is just setting up GPUs and all
yeah,
that. You need to
yeah,
have
yeah.
those skills
yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to get at is like, so this is a very specialized specialized market, or you need like specialized skills as well.
Yeah.
Highly skilled labor this is. Is that going to be a problem for us where...
I don't think so.
You're not seeing that in the market when you're interacting.
I don't think that will be a problem. Now the point is, how many people want to or should be doing that? You have to figure out where is the opportunity. Should I be a user of this technology along with my own data and fine tuning, or how many people should be in the business of building LLMs? Why should it, you know, you understand, right? right? I mean, there's a whole value chain. There will be guys who are building LLMs. There will be guys who will be building, you know, tools and for fine tuning and adding data sets and all of that. Then there will be guys who will be using all of this for particular, you know, industry sectors or businesses and so on. So there is opportunity in everywhere. Obviously, the biggest opportunity will be in the usage of these things. How do you use this, right? It's not that there will be 100 open AIs and 100 LLMs. That's not where the, right? I mean, if you look at the operating system analogy, I mean, there are half a dozen, 10 operating systems. You've got, you know, embedded operating systems. You've got the Linux family. You've got the Windows family, right? And a few others, right? Everybody, but there are, so there is a, just look at the whole compute value chain. Then there are middleware systems, then you've got large software systems like ERPs, and then you've got so many apps and services and things sitting on top of that. Similarly, there will be a similar sort of hierarchy value chain of things over here as well.
That's actually,
and there will be opportunity at every level. The more foundational you go, there will be room for only a few players.
That's actually a good point. In the sense, I had not thought of it that way. Like, the number of people maybe that are involved in like AI or like language models are so few. Like, even though there is so much hype, like you would assume like hundreds of thousands of people are working on it, but I don't think that's the case. It's like, even in OpenAI, I think their total employee count is 300 or 350.
Yeah. Now the point is, we don't know tomorrow how these LLMs will evolve. It could well be that the LLMs don't have to be so big. It could well be that the LLMs can work on the edge, on a single GPU. Right, the kind of innovation and fundamental discovery that's coming, we don't know. Today it takes gazillion amounts of hardware and electricity and dollars to run them. How this will change over time, I don't know. It's too early to predict anything.
So if you read the news reports, or in general, I feel the sentiment is that, I think funding has definitely gone down, no question about that. Like, I think 2 days back, I was reading this report where, in terms of dollar value, total investment in India has dropped by at least 77%.
It has. Now, obviously, investments have become slow, no question about it.
Correct.
Yeah. Early stage still there. The later stage rounds, the CD, BC plus, all have slowed down significantly, no question.
Could you give us some context as to like what is it investing today? Like, are you finding it difficult to source companies? Are there not enough people building good stuff? Or
no, I mean,
and maybe you can contrast that to like 21, 22 as well.
Yeah, I mean, when money was cheap, then there were lots and lots of business plans, right? But some of the best companies will be built around this time. This is right. So there are companies in certain sectors, whether it's manufacturing or agri or fintech, right? Yes, the number of fundings have come down, even and the pace has slowed, right? But I think there are just today a company called Boots got funded. It's in the manufacturing space. Matrix Partners and Nexus did a 3 million plus round. So yes, the number of such announcements is definitely far fewer than was the case early on. I mean, there is certainly no FOMO in the market anymore, right? There is no FOMO.
There's no money in the market, yeah.
There's no FOMO in the market. And people, investors are very, very careful about writing a check. They're taking their sweet time. Early stage, still if the company is good, right, and they feel that, yeah, there is a big opportunity down the road, they're writing checks. Because the chance of overpaying is a bit low when you're doing a seed stage or but later stage companies, particularly because of the high valuations that you know, so many unicorns were minted in 2021-22, and unfortunately several of them are stressed. They don't have viable business models to justify their valuations. So I think it's a, you know, waiting game.
Let's talk EdTech for a second. I think how are you thinking about EdTech? Like, so I'm like, from an outsider perspective, like an average person, when I'm reading the news or I feel like EdTech is getting like slashed everywhere. Like, I mean, in a sense.
No, for a good reason. I had a similar interview with another venture capital journal, and he asked similar questions about EdTech, and my thoughts were same. There has been really very little tech in EdTech. What is EdTech? It's been in the last 3 years, whether it's, you know, it's been a sales driven business.
What does that mean?
Go sell, you know, high pressure sales tactics with hundreds, if not thousands of sales guys selling, you know, some product, right? With very little focus on outcomes, right? When you're in test prep, so we have a company called Messiah School, which is not in test prep. It's in the outcome driven training. Software training, it's a coding academy. It's very easy to measure outcome because of the placement rates. They don't charge till you get a, you know, get placed above a certain threshold. So that's easy to measure outcomes. Second is test prep. If you go and, you know, enroll for some IAS test prep academy or IIT JEE test prep academy, you'll see how you do. Even there, results get muddied because someone is a topper, he or she will give their name for a lakh of rupees to 20 coaching schools, right? So let's leave that aside. But generally, measuring outcomes is somewhat easier. But when you come to K-12, it's very hard. How do you measure outcomes? That's where the focus needs to be. The focus needs to be, whether it is Baijus or Vedanta or QMath. I mean, our founder of QMath, Manan Kutmai, realized it very early. Focus needs to be on measuring outcomes and product-led growth, not sales-led growth. Okay, it is. I have said this repeatedly to all our founders, and I'll say that to you. I don't believe education or edtech is a consumer internet business. It's a brand business. It's a product business. It's through happy customers, word of mouth. Harvard is. You don't think of it through customer acquisition cost, LTV. That's the wrong way of thinking. Great education brands are not built that way. Okay. And then you really think, of how am I going to use tech to do what? It's very simple. How do you measure outcomes? And how do you ensure that the learning outcomes are good? That's where the focus needs to be for it. And is it a solved problem? Not fully. I think GenAI can help significantly. That's the thinking, that's the mindset that has to be there. Not as a consumer internet business, measuring LTV, measuring CAC, all those are nonsense. Those things will happen if you got a great product that where the growth is viral and students and test prep is different. Talk about mass K-12, which has seen the most negative impact. You do that right, then there will be it's not. E-commerce. That you have to think about education differently. Okay, how many in e-commerce you think about how many consumers are transacting online? There's no way to think about edtech. How many students are learning online? You know, you have to think differently. The mindset has to be different. You have to come at it like an educator.
So one aspect was get rid of the sales-driven aspect, like sales-driven model. Focus on outcomes.
Focus on measure the ability to measure outcomes in a where there is no, you know, clear, like getting a job is an outcome. That's simple, right? Here or cracking the IIT JEE or the NEET is an outcome, right? In a regular K-12 journey where you are trying to teach kid math or writing or science concepts, it's harder. How do you do that? Through the combination of product, mentoring, teacher, student journey, all of that, how do you do that? If you did that, then you won't have the need to have banks of, you know, sales guys employing sharp practices for parents to take out loans and buy subscriptions or renew subscriptions and so on.
So at this point, I feel like this is a system where like it's gone wrong from both sides, right? Like when you mentioned that example of like, you know, parents taking out like loan and then I feel like that's a bit stretching. I mean, that's a bit I kind of view that as a fault of the...
I agree. Look, I'm not going to place all the ills of society on the founders. There are so many things that are problematic with our society. There's a supply-demand imbalance, right? I mean, every parent, every family is anxious to give the best, make sure, because we don't have... We are a very large country, right? We don't have quality schooling for the vast majority of our kids. We don't have quality colleges for the vast majority of our kids. We don't have, as you know, so many kids are entering the job market, 1 million every month. We don't have good jobs for everybody who's entering the market, right? So yeah, there are societal, economic, much larger pressure. But even within that, there are people who have built thoughtful companies. That, I mean, I'm not going to place all the blame for everything that's wrong with our society and our economy on a founder. In fact, I would say why. I mean, there are so many cases where investors come in and say, hey, don't worry about profitability, or don't worry, just go for growth. Once you capture the market, we'll figure out profitability. And it doesn't quite work that way. Because, you know, some of these markets are not naturally winner-take-all markets. I mean, a social media thing is, maybe an e-commerce horizontal platform is, right? But not everything is a winner-take-all market. You can build several large, valuable businesses.
So I think, at least in EdTech, I think the crash happened, not in EdTech, but generally I think the crash happened in, let's say, 2022, like early 2022. I think that's my recollection. We are sitting in 2023 now, late 2023. So do you think people have learned the lesson?
I hope so. I mean, some of it also happened because people thought that that COVID was the new normal. It is not necessarily the new normal, right? Kids went back to school, right? So then sort of the old ways of old scheduling, right? So it's a complicated, to my mind, and it's my view, is that education is education. It's not consumer internet.
Yeah, I mean, so education is one. EdTech is like one sector where I've spoken to a few people, and generally when we talk about different sectors, like people just voice their opinions. But here, generally people get very ideological. Like, I mean, in the sense, people are very passionate about education.
Yeah.
I was talking to another VC where she was just like, I'm just not going to invest in EdTech. Like, I don't care what the economics are, what the business models are. I'm just not for it. Like, people, I feel they treat that like as an abortion case or something like that, where it becomes very ideological.
Why is that?
I don't know, but I do get that sense. Like,
mm-hmm.
There's a lot of emotion when people talk about
EdTech. Yeah, EdTech and a similar emotion one can attach to healthcare. Because at some level, you know, this can be quasi public goods.
I have not seen that in healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what I was trying to get to. Like,
mm-hmm.
even healthcare, you don't get, like, people talk healthcare very rationally and very, like,
yeah.
you know. Like, one explanation I got was, like, because most people have kids and, I don't know, people really care about their kids and they may not really care about so much about their health.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's why the emotions are, like, I don't know.
I find it hard to be.
I don't know. Yeah.
Finally, it comes down to the founders and the investors. What kind of business do they want to build? It comes down to people, right?
Broadly, is it fair? Like, I feel like broadly, your focus seems to be on AI at this point, or is that?
Yeah, I mean, we believe that AI is gonna be. We are not going to be investing in AI LLMs and picks and shovels and middleware. No, that's not what we do. That's probably much bigger funds and Silicon Valley funds to do that, because that's a very risky thing. If you're investing in a pick and shovel sort of a tool, you know, the platform can subsume that, right? And then where are you?
I'm really sorry. So just to make sure that I understand the pick and shovel analogy, you're just talking about like services being built on top of, let's say, OpenAI APIs, right?
Yeah, same things like that, right?
Okay.
We are interested in, our sectors remain the same. Job tech, ed tech, fintech, mobility, ag tech, climate. But the companies that we look at have to have Gen AI at their core. How are we going to use this new technology and what in an innovative way and which enables, right, the superior customer value proposition and the delivery of that value proposition in a much better and more efficient and effective way. So the Gen AI thinking is ingrained in the way they think of their business model. They don't have to necessarily, we are not going to be investing in an open AI competitor. No, that's not who we are.
Fair enough.
Okay.
When you mentioned, I was just thinking about who is competing with OpenAI anyways, yeah.
Well, I mean, Meta is, Google is, I'm sure IBM is, somebody else is thinking of building something, and Europe, I'm sure, has, China maybe has. TCS may be building something here.
I feel like China has kind of like, I feel China missed the boat on like.
I don't think so. It's too early to tell. I think one of the properties of these models is that you can take what is there and build something, a copycat, much faster and cheaper.
I don't know. Like, OpenAI is at the four. They're already done with four iterations of GPT,
yeah.
And. Somebody catching up to that. I mean, I've used Bard as well, like the model from Google. It's very bad, like it's horrible. It's not good. There's no comparison with ChatGPT at all. So I don't know. It's fair. Like maybe if you have the resources, if you have the data, and if there's enough funding, maybe you can.
There have been enough times where fast followers have won. So.
You mean last.
Fast followers.
What does that mean?
That means you are not the first to market.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's been the case, I think, most of the time, right? Like,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Google was at the end,
yeah,
Facebook
yeah.
was at
so,
the end.
So
yeah.
It's above my pay grade to say who's going to win.
Fair enough.
Lose,
yeah. Any other thing about, I want to close the chapter on AI, I think. Any other thing that I forgot to mention on the AI?
Too early. Too early is, there's a lot going to happen. So there's nothing is the last word.
Understood.
Okay. But this is not a red herring. This is not a crypto Web3 story. This is real. That I'll place a bet on.
So let's think of a hypothetical. Let's play, let's imagine a little bit. Let's fast forward like, I don't know, a decade from now.
Yeah.
And Gen AI has not panned out at all. Like let's say, so we are in 23. GPT-5 comes out in December of 23.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, things start going down from there, like nothing happens, maybe some other technology takes up which is completely orthogonal to like let's say Gen AI. Like how would you feel about it? Like what would be in your mind when a decade from now?
Made a big mistake in calling things.
Move on.
Obviously, what else would
there? Fair enough.
Hopefully we won't, I mean, if we'll see the signs sooner than 10 years from now.
Inshallah.
It's not that, you know, we're going down a path at the speed of light and 10 years later say, oh, I screwed up. No, I mean, if it's not going to pan out in 10 years, we'll probably see signs of it next year.
Was there ever a trend that you were extremely confident in which did not pan out?
I mean, I thought crypto had something to it. Right? And I didn't know quite what. I didn't understand it. I thought it had something. I didn't understand all this.
I think people still don't understand it. Like, like people in
Web3
are struggling.
People don't understand. I mean, the whole business of money is very slippery. In general, currencies, money, fiat currency, all the different kind of gold standards, this, that. It's a very complicated. Even economists don't understand. So, how? You know, money as an asset, money as a store of value, money as this, money as that. So that's why I think it's just. But you can even very early see in our own portfolio, we see companies have already used Gen AI to improve their products,
correct,
to reduce cost. So it's very different. It's not abstract. It's not all this, you know, this thing is going to change the world kind of thing from, right? It's like, shit, I can use this today to reduce my cost. To have a better diagnosis for radiology based on AI.
I think that's pretty very fair.
So when you see that, when a better place can screen applicants for the frontline workforce management that they need to do in literally tens of thousands every month, they can do it much better using this technology. You see, that works. When you see a ag tech company being able to do customer support at a fraction of the cost and in a much better way with Gen AI, you see, that works. When you see a digital diagnostics company using not just, one is different kinds of AI. One is machine learning on medical imaging to identify, you know, to study X-rays, but also using Gen AI to write a more detailed report to help the radiologist write a more actionable, insightful report. Two users of two different texts using two different kinds of AI. One is more Gen AI, wherever you are feeding all past reports and different kinds of data sets. Here it's image data sets. Okay? And so it's working today across domains. It's not something, some abstract stuff like crypto.
Yeah. I think that's very important in the sense, like, when people try to explain, like, I was talking to some of my friends and they were trying to explain, like, smart contracts in, like, Web3. It's very abstract and very difficult to, like, kind of, but for, like, average people, you can explain deep learning just by, like, you know, whatever happened on Instagram, like, how does Instagram recommend, that's all deep learning, right? Like, that's all AI, in your Google apps, Google images or your iPhone, images, how do they get sorted? That's all recommendation. So that's much more easy for you to understand what's happening and, like, familiarize with yourself with the technology rather than, like, abstract smart contracts and who's using them, where is it working. Yeah. Let's move a little away from AI and Gen AI. In terms of, let's say, broad, like, investing or VC ecosystem per se, you've been an investor for a decent fair amount of
time. Fair bit of time, yeah. Both early stage as well as mid-market private equity.
Correct.
Close to 13 years, yeah.
Yeah, so a decade plus. Like, how do you think, like, the ecosystem has evolved? Like,
it's evolved significantly, so on every front. If you look at the value chain from angels to pre-seed to seed to, you know, and on. It's become much more sophisticated, right? You've got two generations of successful entrepreneurs. The Flipkarts, the Myntra, right? Who have all become angels, have also gone on to start new companies. So the whole ecosystem has matured quite significantly.
And the people that are, like, are you happy with the way the kind of people are coming into, so, like, the, just to set this up in a sense, like, VC ecosystem is obviously a lot of money to be made, and I feel in the VC ecosystem, VCs also end up making a lot of money themselves.
No, it's not so easy.
But I feel like the possibility.
Yeah, of course there is money to be made.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
And but it's not like it's not like a lottery, or it's not like some, you know, alchemy. It is it requires talent, perseverance. Hard work, and then on top of that, a dollop of good luck. But there is, India is a growing economy. It's a terrific entrepreneurial talent. It's a large growing market. So yes, there is money to be made, but there's a lot of money to be lost as well if you don't take the right calls.
Correct. Just to continue that, in the sense, like, you know, how you mentioned, like, this is not alchemy and, you know, this is not lottery. You may think that, and I may believe that, but obviously there will be a lot of people who will think exactly that, right? Like, where let's just see if we can get in a VC firm and let's try to make some money and then let's get out.
Or what do you mean by that? What do you mean by make some money and get out? You mean just build some valuation and the greater fool theory?
Maybe I didn't phrase it. Let me tell you what I'm trying. Make this more clear. In the sense, every profession, I feel, you can make some amount of money. My impression is, and if you are in the VC ecosystem, you have ability to make outsized returns. By that I
no,
mean,
I think if you are an entrepreneur, honestly, professions, and it comes with the risk. Entrepreneurs make the most outsized returns.
That is true. I agree.
Without a doubt. And rightly so.
In the case where you do not want to be an entrepreneur, but you want to be involved in, let's say, the venture ecosystem, do you see a lot of people coming in where maybe the mentality is just to, like...
Not early stage. Early stage requires a lot of commitment. Early stage is hard work. Early stage is identifying opportunity, taking those bets, and also helping, working them alongside. You, if you don't want to be an entrepreneur, probably a better is a corporate finance. You know, the large investment banks and large. There's a lot more money to be made there. For you go get the right degrees from the Harvards and the Whartons of the world, get into bulge bracket firms, and work your way up into global banks, and you will make a very handsome packet. Early stage investment is hard work. It's exciting work. It's intellectually very stimulating. It's knowledge work.
So the aspect that makes...
It's knowledge plus the ability or at least the claim to be able to see around the corner, see things that, others may not see. So it's tremendously exciting work.
So it's hard work in the sense of like early stage, or it's difficult work is because it's difficult to identify the future winners, right?
Yeah, it's not
that's
easy
the,
at all. Yeah.
That's the hard part.
Whereas if you are in the business of provisioning huge amounts of capital for large projects, corporate finance, big bulge bracket banks, you do all of that. Or institutional equities and public markets. Lots of much easier ways of making money.
Mm-hmm.
But this is very exciting work.
Fair enough. See, on the evolution you mentioned, it's definitely the value chain has grown, and I think money has also.
There are many more players at each stage in the value chain.
Correct.
The number and quality of entrepreneurs has also improved a lot, and because you've seen 2-3 generations of success, so they've come back as mentors, they come back as angel investors, they've come back as repeat entrepreneurs.
Not to dwell so much on the negative, but the most of the developments you see have been broadly positive, right? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, also India is still a very, very metro-oriented ecosystem.
What's
Bangalore, Delhi, Gurgaon. I think there's a lot of opportunity beyond the top 5-6 cities, right? It's still, even within the metros like Bangalore, Gurgaon are top, followed by Mumbai, Hyderabad, Chennai, right? But there are so many other cities, then there's so much talent there as well. I would like to see more of that coming from other tier 1, tier 2 cities and towns. The second thing that we don't, I think hopefully will evolve faster, is a very strong corporate M&A market, so that startup, that acquisition is also a exit route for entrepreneurs and investors.
Right now it's not so much,
it's
is
not
it?
That, it's not a, that big an M&A market, right? Third,
I'm so sorry, just to say that, but I think in that case, generally there should be a desire or opportunities to get merged.
That's what I'm saying, it has to become, the whole ecosystem has to develop.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And for tech products, we want corporate India to be better customers.
What does that mean?
Encourage Indian startups by becoming paying customers for them. See, one is the whole B2C, I'm talking about B2B startups.
Okay.
Largely, many of them go look for customers in the US and Europe and so on, right? If corporate India could also become good customers, I think that will give a lot of fillip to the startup system ecosystem.
I'm a little confused there, in the sense, when Indian software services are being sold to the US, what do the Indians use then? Say CRM.
Good products. CRM, they're all using global products.
Salesforce, etc.
Yeah.
Okay. But partly there's not so, I mean, what they are doing in general is like okay, right? I understand the point you're making, but the motivations are in, if I understand correctly, that there's not a lot of money in India to be made out of, let's say, B2B SaaS, and that's why they're pushing for.
I think the Indian B2B market in general, the corporate India needs to become more sophisticated about, it is in their interest to promote and encourage the Indian startup sector.
In terms of like VC, again, ecosystem, I feel like it's completely dominated by Bangalore. Is that fair to say?
Bangalore has a big, I think Gurgaon has an equal share.
Equal, is it?
Yeah, at one time, I think before the pandemic it was. I think now it's become, Bangalore has stolen a march.
Okay.
Over Gurgaon, because I remember in 2018-19, the Gurgaon and Bangalore were equal.
Oh, okay.
And then Mumbai was a third, followed by Chennai and Hyderabad. I think Bangalore has taken a stolen a march over Gurgaon. Maybe it could be because of pollution and all of that in the NCR. I think several people have told me, hey, man, that's too polluted, I'm going to move to Bangalore.
Okay.
So that has happened. But I'd like to see similar growth in Chennai, Bangalore. I mean, Chennai has done very well in certain sectors, particularly SaaS, B2B SaaS.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
And it has done very well in the old manufacturing promoter driven the startups because of the auto industry around Chennai, right? So,
but in general, I think that's also the way the industry kind of coalesces itself, right? Even in the US,
yeah.
I think
yeah.
you have Silicon Valley, then I think a smaller chunk in New York,
yeah.
some in Miami, and some in Texas as well.
And
but
Boston, Cambridge, and Boston.
But
yeah.
I think 70% of that is in,
yeah.
I think, Silicon Valley. Yeah.
There is a certain sort of the way things evolve.
Yeah, correct.
But even in India, I feel there is India such a huge country. There's so much talent in so many other places, whether it is, for instance, now in NCR, beyond in the north, Jaipur is emerging as a place for lots of startups. Hopefully Chandigarh will. You know, central India has some very nice cities. And now, I mean, Indore has both an IIT and an IIM, and it's a great city.
Mm.
Bhopal is a lovely city. Ahmedabad. In Kerala, you've got, you know, Kochi, Thiruvananthapuram. There was a lot of mobile, particularly mobile development activity about 7-8 years back coming out of Kerala. So, I mean, there is room. I mean, if you think about it, Kolkata is a brilliant place, right? But
they've completely missed the boat on.
Yeah,
missed
the boat. Hopefully, you know, there's always another day.
I think nothing, I don't think anything's going to happen there for the next decade or so. I think it takes a lot of time for the.
It's not easy.
Another city which I'm surprised that is not, like, is Hyderabad. Like, I feel Hyderabad is, I feel Hyderabad has a lot of large tech players who have like huge offices there, but the tech.
My colleague and I were in Hyderabad just last week. Hyderabad is the biggest creator of IT jobs today, apparently, in the last 2 years.
Okay.
All global capability centers like the Googles, Microsofts,
correct,
and Amazons, and so many of the BFSI, the Morgan Stanley, all have huge centers over there.
Huge.
Right? And Hyderabad has done very well in infrastructure companies, Lanco's and GMR's, GVK's, and then Bulk Pharma. But this will happen. They have been early. They're a bit slow on the kind of innovation you see in Bangalore, but I think in the next 10 years, they will catch up.
Like, I always felt that if those companies had, instead of going to Hyderabad, had come to Bangalore, Bangalore would be like the Mecca or like this.
No, there's enough traffic woes in Bangalore. We don't.
That's
I'd much rather they went to Shimoga or Mysore or Belgaum. Yeah.
But I feel social life is much better. Like, I feel it makes our social life much better.
There's more to India than just Bangalore. I mean, we should think beyond Bangalore and Gurgaon and Hyderabad. There's some beautiful places. I mean, all the cities and towns I talked about. I mean, Indore, Bhopal, Chandigarh, Jaipur, Ahmedabad, Baroda, Thiruvananthapuram. These are lovely cities and towns.
Fair enough. Let's just close with your schedule. Maybe, like, what does your schedule look like?
My schedule is, because we have a team in Seattle, we do lots of late evening calls as well. So you're talking about my daily schedule.
Correct.
Is that what you're talking
Correct.
About? Yeah, it's a combination of meetings from the office, from home, and a bunch of me time for reading, catching up, and all of that. So and then obviously when meeting entrepreneurs and yeah.
What time do you wake up?
I wake up at around 6 o'clock.
6 o'clock, is that? And
go to bed at around
10.
You know, it gets later. I would say around 11 o'clock.
11.
Yeah.
7 hours.
Yeah.
Okay.
I need. I do take a half an hour nap in the afternoon if I can get one.
Right.
That's really energizing. Very
is that like a nap or like a NSD or?
No, it will be a nap.
Okay. Okay.
If I can find a sofa somewhere, I'll just chill, relax.
Okay. No exercise, is it?
I do exercise.
Evening.
Evenings.
Gym.
No, I have a trainer who comes home, but I used to. I actually hurt my foot. Otherwise, I used to do slow jogging, not speed jogging. Slow jogging of 10 km about 2 to 3 times a week.
Oh.
Yeah. In the last 5 months, I have not been able to because I hurt my heel, my right heel. But it's now back to normal. So I'll go back to my jogging routine.
We are facing the same injury. Anyways, thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure.